Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you this morning. As Sarah said, I'm Bridget, so I'm the vicar, and I'll, for the next few minutes, be helping us to think about that story that we've just heard from John's Gospel. I have to say, it seems a little bit odd this morning to be exploring a Bible story that's all about thirst, when over the past week, the news has been dominated with stories of floods. This is a story of too little water, when we've heard lots of stories of too much water. So rather than start with the theme of thirst, I actually want to start by sharing a story I heard about the floods in Texas. Earlier this week, three bakers who worked at the El Bolillo Bakery in Houston found themselves trapped in their bakery because of the floodwater from Hurricane Harvey. And they decided that they would use the time in the bakery when they couldn't get home to bake. So for 24 hours, they used more than 4,200 pounds of flour to bake hundreds of loaves of bread. All night long, they baked. And when finally the water dropped enough that they could get out, they then loaded the fresh bread into their vans, and then they delivered it to all the emergency centres around the city. What I found interesting is that they themselves were victims of the flood, albeit they weren't in any danger, but they were certainly inconvenienced. They couldn't get home. And yet, they became the people who then offered hope and help to others. I love the way that they did that they put that energy into thinking about how they could serve others. This morning, I want to suggest that the same thing happens to the woman in today's story, that this is a woman who is a victim, who is trapped by circumstances, and yet she becomes the very one who brings hope and help and life to others. So let me start by telling you a little bit about this woman. John, who's the writer of this gospel, tells us very specifically that the woman came to the well at noon. Usually women, and it was the women who went to draw water, would go early in the morning or early in the evening. The reason? Because it was the coolest part of the day, and you wouldn't be carrying a great amount of water in the hottest part of the day. But the well was also a place where the women would meet and they would exchange news. If you've ever heard the phrase water cooler conversation, the well was the water cooler of its time, the time and place where you went, I guess, for a bit of a gossip and a catch up. So there was a social dimension to collecting water as well. And that suggests that if the woman went at noon, perhaps she was trying to avoid some of the other women. Or maybe the other women had actually previously avoided her, and she was fed up getting the cold shoulder, so she chose to go when she knew no one else would be there. As the story goes on, we discover that this woman has had five husbands, and the reason isn't made clear. It could be that she's been widowed, divorced, perhaps she's been taken on by a male relative who's been obliged to marry her and provide for her. Perhaps she's promiscuous, maybe even a prostitute. In the past, over the recent history, last few hundred years, people assumed, of course, that the woman must have been at fault, because that's often what happens, isn't it, that we blame the woman. And yet more recent interpretations of this story, feminist interpretations, interpretations from other cultures, actually see this woman as the victim of the piece. On the basis that women in that culture couldn't divorce men, the chances are that she has been repeatedly used and abused by her husbands. And probably she has married and remarried for her own survival, literally to put bread on the table. Either way, whether she is at fault or not, this is a woman who has a bit of a reputation, a colourful history, if you will, which is probably why she's collecting water at noon. Alongside that, we're told that she's a Samaritan, and she's part of that ethnic group, and that meant that to the Jews at the time, she was a social pariah, someone that they would go out of their way to avoid. The very fact that Jesus is even in this area of Samaritan land is rather surprising, because they usually journeyed a long way out of their way to avoid it. So all of those reasons make her encounter with Jesus rather astonishing and rather unlikely. And when Jesus first meets this nameless woman, he is hot and tired and thirsty, sitting by the well, but with no way of drawing water. And what I find interesting is he needs the woman to help him in order to quench his thirst. When you read this story, it is almost as if Jesus is acting as a mirror of the woman, because in his own thirst, in his own need for help, he's reflecting her thirst for something, and he's reflecting her inability to quench that thirst. It's as if Jesus is saying to her, with each of these men, you have been trying to quench your thirst, trying to quench your thirst for love, or security, or safety, or acceptance, or significance, but you can't get to the water. But I can help. I can help you quench that thirst. And then mirrored in Jesus' own need, as she sees his thirst and his need for help, she recognizes something that is true about herself. Sir, she says, I can see that you're a prophet. What she's saying is, you've hit the nail on the head. I wonder what it is that we thirst for. I wonder what it is that drives us, that perhaps under everything we are looking for. And I wonder where it is that we look for that thing. The Mexican bakers weren't the only people to offer help this week in Houston. I also heard a story, I've got a number of friends who live in North America, so all this came up on their Facebook feeds, but a story about a man called Mattress Mac. And when the city started to flood, Mattress Mac, who owns two large furniture stores, put a video on social media saying, if you've got nowhere to go, come on down to the store and you can sleep in my furniture store overnight. Hundreds of people streamed in and they all bunked up on his mattresses in the shops, on the posh showroom sofas and beds and recliners. And according to Mac, it was like a slumber party on steroids. What I liked about it was really simple. He had what they needed, and so he gave it to them. He wasn't precious about keeping his showroom stock nice and clean. He had what they needed, so he gave it to them. Jesus is saying to this woman, I sense, I know that you are thirsty, and I can give you something that will quench your thirst, and it will mean that you are never thirsty again. Whatever you have been looking for with these husbands and you have not found, I will give you something and you will never thirst again. Just like Mac offered his mattresses, Jesus offers this woman what he calls living water. One of the things that I notice about this offer as you read the story is that there are no strings attached. There is no bargain struck. Unlike some of the other stories in the Gospels, there is no call to repentance. The woman doesn't promise that she'll change or live differently. There is no condemnation. The word sinner is not used anywhere. All that there is an offer of living water direct from its source. And we're not told if or how this woman accepts the offer, but something changes for her. Because this woman who's been avoiding others, who's gone to the well at noon, returns to the town and she goes to all of these people and she says, come, see a man who's told me everything I've ever done. I find that a really funny sentence because those people must have been laughing at her. Love, we all know you've had five husbands and you're on to your sixth. Everybody in this town knows everything about you already. Come see a man who knows everything I've ever done. There's no revelation there. If you've heard that phrase, only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun, which I can attest to be true, having spent the last week lying in the midday sun. You don't go out in the hot weather, and yet these people leave the town at the hottest part of the day and they go out to the well to see what the woman's talking about. I just wonder what's going on here, because it seems to me she's not just received this water of life, she's actually become a source of it herself. There is something happening inside her that is making other people feel thirsty when they look at her. It's as if they're looking at her now thinking, we want what she has, and we're going to follow her out to the well to find out where she got it. And that's what encounter with Jesus does. It takes you from a place of unquenchable thirst to a place where you can be like a source of water for others. In this story, it takes the woman from being a victim to being the one who delivers hope and help to others. As I read the news this week, I couldn't help but notice the disparity between the coverage of the floods in Texas and the coverage of the floods in South Asia, and also those that happened in Sierra Leone a couple of weeks ago. I suspect I'm not alone in having noticed there's been a bit of difference there. And in the light of the death toll in South Asia, I was slightly cautious about sharing stories about mattresses and Mexican bakers because they may seem rather shallow. And yet this story in John is a story about one woman. And I want to suggest that these individual stories can have huge social and political significance when they're combined. Earlier this week, I read an article in the newspaper by a woman named Jagat Patnaik, who works for ActionAid, one of the aid agencies working in South Asia. And in the article, she said that the floods there are most concerning for women and girls because the customs and culture in some of those places mean that women and girls are not allowed into public spaces. That's the way that society works. And where is aid delivered to those in need? It's delivered to public spaces. So if there are women who don't have men around them to go and access that aid, those women have no access to aid. They become the most vulnerable victims of the floods. This story in John happened in a very similar culture to the ones I've just described. There are just as many rules governing where women could and couldn't go at that time. The very fact a man and woman were talking in public was highly unusual and highly irregular. So when Jesus strikes up this conversation with the woman, he is subverting all of those customs. And what I find really interesting is this. Jesus doesn't just help this woman. Of course he helps the woman. That's what Jesus does. We all know that. The Gospels are full of stories about Jesus helping people. But he starts the conversation by asking her for help. He puts himself in a place of need and looks to her to help him. And when he does that, he transforms her status. He takes her from being the helpless victim, and he makes her the one who is empowered to bring life to others. Encounters with Jesus aren't just about changing individual lives, though that is what happens. They're also about changing social structures. And in this story, the proof of that is this, that the woman leaves behind her water jar at the well, because she doesn't need it anymore, because she is a different woman after this encounter. Her role has been changed, and so she leaves the jar when she goes. So the question remains for us. What do you thirst for? What's driving you? What are you looking for or longing for in life? As you look at our world, what do you thirst for? And perhaps most importantly, where do you look to find it? Amen.